Thanks, Sarah. Kia ora. Welcome to the panel on RNZ National. I'm Karen Hay. I'm here for Wallace today, and our panellists are journalist Zoe George. Hi again, Zoe.
Kia ora.
And Dean Hall, CEO of Rocketworks. Good afternoon, Dean.
Kia ora.
And what were you saying before? I cut you off at the pass there.
Excited about toilet. I did not think about this. I got so excited I didn't even know the news was coming up.
Come on then, tell us.
I was just saying about alpine huts in Aoraki Mount Cook National Park. One of the toilets there, the plateau hut, actually used to just poop out, and the poop went down and just fell straight onto the glacier, into the ice fall. And that got replaced. It was a number of years ago now. There we go. You look down and, yeah, your poop just went straight out like 50 metres down below you.
How unpleasant.
Wow.
A view.
Mm. It was rather cold but breezy sometimes.
Right. You'll be pleased to see, Zoe, that your toilet puns have been dribbling in.
Here's lovely.
One. A hole was found in the wall of the public toilets. Police are looking into it. And the police station toilets were stolen last night. Police have nothing to go on.
Ba-dum-bum.
Love you it. You most know the value of a toilet when there isn't one.
It's yes. True. Is your guest getting bogged down trying to find toilet puns? And no flash in the pan, Malcolm from Hamilton says. And I've got a story here via text, which is, it's really flash fiction. It's so long. It's at least 300 words, but I'll send it to you, Zoe, okay?
That would be amazing.
It's a big, long story. Then Joe the Roaster says, toilets, as a green coffee buyer, I've travelled to various parts of the world where some of the toilets aren't that great. A great toilet story that I have is being up in the mountains of Bolivia and asking to use the toilet. It was a 15-foot deep hole with a single 200-millimetre plank over top of it. A treacherous drop, but with the most incredible view of Peru and the Andes out the front of me. That's from Joe the Roaster. Bit like your
Amazing.
Story, Dean. And this one, this is a little rhyme. There once was a plumber called Clyde who fell down the dunny and died. The next day his brother fell into another, so now they're interred side by side.
Oh, yes, I'm loving goodness. The creativity. And I love the fact that we've started a conversation about this, because this is the whole idea around my TED Talk, is about understanding that this is a universal experience. And it's, you know, talking about toilets and access to toilets is considered taboo, but it shouldn't be. I'm really thankful for the stories and all the puns. And please keep them coming, because they really do help. We can smash the cistern together.
I'll send them to you after the panel. Well, the big news
I'm
today.
Wincing from the puns.
Wincing, are you saying?
Yeah.
The big news today, everyone. That was the 1 p.m. press conference. I hope you heard it. Students in year 11 to 13 living in alert level 3 areas will be allowed back to the classroom next Tuesday. Education and COVID-19 Response Minister Chris Hipkins said they would need to meet strict guidelines to return, including wearing face masks at school and on school transport. He also said those returning should be fully vaccinated. Staff and volunteers on site would need to return a negative test and would need to have their first vaccine before November the 15th. Well, we've heard plenty from the principals today, so let's go to a student in that crucial year of learning, exams and assessment, year 13, or in old school terms, that's the seventh form. He's the head boy of Papatoetoe High School, and his name is Flo Akaola. He's on the line. Hey, Flo, how are you doing?
Good, I'm good, thank you.
You'll have to get your uniform out of the wardrobe.
Oh, yes.
You haven't worn it for a while. Are you worried about going back to school?
A little bit, but I'm excited to see all my peers. It's been quite a while. Excited to get back into the routine, yeah.
Yeah, so how have the last couple of months at home been?
Oh, it's definitely been quite difficult, especially taking it into consideration I have had quite the year in terms of lockdowns, especially with our school, Papatoetoe High School, having our outbreak within our school. Definitely with our students, it's a lot harder to learn from home without having that face-to-face learning, which makes it so crucial, especially for our last year, especially me being year 13, and all our seniors in terms of NCEA. Working from home, it adds on this kind of idea where your home life and your school life is kind of all mixed up, and it makes it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, very much so. And not everyone will have kept up during lockdown. Have you heard from students who are struggling and how they're coping?
Yeah, definitely. I have heard not only from my school, but other schools as well, because a number of problems come into the way when learning from home, because a lot of our students, they don't have access to Wi-Fi, but also access to devices becomes quite difficult. And then also having to look after family at home or working as well. Some of our students do work. And also some of our students, they have families that are frontline workers. So it's a whole bunch of different things that kind of play its mix into not only our studies and make things a lot more harder.
Yes. And Dean, what about you as a student? So you went to university. Would you have fared well under lockdown conditions?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I think I saw a really funny comment online. A parent was saying, I'm not sure who's going to start day drinking first, me or the kids. So I think it's one of those things where it might be a little bit fun for a start, obviously a bit of a distraction, but after a while, you know, there's only so much Fortnite you can watch, right? Before you actually want to go see your friends.
Is it Fortnite for you, Flo?
not for me.
No, not your scene. What about you, Zoe? Do you think it's a good idea that students get back into the classroom?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it, what it would be like if I was a teenager. As much as I love my parents, being locked down with them for months on end would absolutely do my head in. So I would be keen to get back to school. But Flo, what's the uptake of the vaccine been like in your community?
Definitely it's been half and half, I think, from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely been a lot of people really willing to get involved. And I think slowly over time, it has taken some time to get more people involved. And that's just come down to the fact that a lot of our people and community, we really need good information and good motivation. And we've seen that come through with all the fun little vaccination sites that have been coming up and playing music and giving out food parcels, which has been really positive to see. And I think there are still worries among that kind of requirement in terms of going back to school. But I think there's also a side where it's also reassurance knowing that you can be safer in terms of going back to school with that.
Well, what's going to happen?
I was just going to say the latest fashion item now is the face mask. So have you got a stylish face mask, Flo?
Oh, yes, I have a collection of face masks because of COVID.
Good to hear.
So what's going to happen to those who aren't vaccinated? They won't be able to get back to school, so that's going to put them back as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's where a lot of my concerns also play a part as well, because we want everybody to have a fair chance and to have an equal amount of support in terms of finishing this year, especially with our year 13. It's a lot harder to engage with the students if they're not at school and if we don't have them with our teachers and all the rest of us to motivate each other. So I think that's another aspect of trying to get our students back to school in terms of worries about COVID, but also about the vaccination, which is equally as important.
Yes. What did you make of this unexpected event grade? That might help.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was very relieved to hear about that. It just makes things up. It relieves a whole lot of pressure on us to not rely solely on how well you perform in the exam. It just, you know, takes the best grade from the work that you've completed throughout the year and also your exams. I'm not the only one who shares that opinion, so it's a great thing for us. We're very grateful.
Great. That's students whose learning has been disrupted by lockdown. They can't go to the exam. They'll be eligible for this unexpected event grade, which is good. And this is your last year at high school. And have you and your friends been able to plan for next year, or just taking each day as it comes?
I think right before we went into lockdown because of Delta, there was a lot of hopeful plans. And so am I. I'd applied for uni and scholarships and so forth. But I think because we have been in lockdown for so long, right now we're all just focusing on surviving and getting through everything. I was just taking it day by day and trying to focus on this year, trying to pass so that we can get to the point where we can go on to fulfill our dreams in terms of future goals.
Sure. What would you like to do next year? Where have you applied for? Where do you want to go?
I'm actually wanting to study to become a social worker.
Oh, right. And where will you do that? In Auckland or?
Yeah, Auckland Uni.
Oh, well, good luck with that, and good luck with going back to school on Tuesday and the exams. Or have you already got most of your, points?
I've actually already passed
You've passed, right. Congratulations. As head boy of Papatoetoe High School, of course you have. Thanks, Flo.
Thank you very much.
As I said, head boy of Papatoetoe High School, Flo Akoula. Good stuff there. Gosh, he's a really good student, obviously, isn't he, Zoe?
Oh, amazing. Total inspiration. And what a fantastic leader for his community as well.
It's now 18 minutes past four on the panel, and as we get closer to the UN Climate Change Conference, COP26 in Glasgow, which runs from October 31st to November 12th, New Zealand Professor James Renwick, who is a member of the IPCC, has written an open letter to us all that declares within this letter, he says, because we have spent so long doing nothing, time is now very short, and no step that we make personally is too small. And Professor Renwick says that the changing climate affects everything. We all live in the climate system and we all owe our lives and our livelihoods to it. The cost of climate change could become overwhelming this century, even for the wealthiest countries. However, new research from the EECA, which is Energy Efficiency and Conservation Authority, highlights New Zealanders' complacency when it comes to climate change. One in five of us don't believe in climate change at all. Well, EECA's General Manager of Marketing and Communications, Joe Bai, joins us. Kia ora, Joe.
Kia ora, Karen. How are you going?
I'm good, thank you. I'm surprised by these findings. Well, maybe I'm not. I had to scratch my head at them. That one in five of us don't believe in climate change. Do we not believe that the climate is changing, or we don't believe it's changing because of humans?
Well, the question that we ask is whether they believe climate change is real. And so we have those that are adamant, and then we have those that are a little bit undecided. And it can be quite sobering to see those stats. But our work is not necessarily to convince every single climate denier that their thinking is outdated or that the science is irrefutable. But what we feel is the more important mahi is to take that 80%, the majority of New Zealanders who do accept and acknowledge that climate change is real, and actually help us all, galvanise us into taking far more compelling action to help mitigate climate change.
So look at it from the other direction, basically.
Yeah, it's important to recognise that there's still this minority that we can't quite get across the line just yet, but time will help us do that, we hope. In the meantime, there is this great majority, the mass, that really, if we got all of us into doing just an extra step or action every day, that would obviously go a long way. So that's where we need to put our focus.
In this open letter, Professor Renwick was very clear about the impact on business, yet well over a third of businesses in this country don't think it's going to impact their business. Can you break that down a bit further?
Yeah, we obviously seek insight from all sorts of businesses around the country, so from all over, different regions, different industry sectors, and also different sizes. And obviously New Zealand is predominantly made up by huge SME components. And it is interesting, as you get into much smaller businesses, they themselves are the ones who emphasise that their size is, that there's not a lot that they can contribute. We're obviously, EECA's doing quite a lot of work with large energy users, large emitters, to help transition them towards renewable energy sourcing for the production manufacturing of their practices, and we're making good progress there. But yeah, there are a lot of businesses out there who are just not entirely sure how they can materially make a difference. And so the work for us to do there is to remind them that every single one of us can contribute in this space. And when we look at New Zealand, because we also see the excuse that from just all forms of life, that New Zealand's just too small to have any impact. So kind of it's worth reminding them that, if every other comparably sized country or city or state came out with that as sort of an excuse of whether or not to act or not, and we're talking about Sydney, Ireland, Berlin, I think Los Angeles is of a similar size, we really would struggle to transition the globe towards low carbon sort of living. So we just really can't use that as an excuse. And also our energy emissions are going up. and we do emit more per capita, which is some, you know, a lot to do with our unusual export agricultural profile, but nonetheless it is what it is. And so we do need to kind of put a circuit breaker in there to say we need to go in the other direction.
Dean, you run a business. What is your business, Rocketworks, doing in relation to the future and the impact that climate change might have on your business?
Well, I suppose we're kind of lucky because, you know, we make video games. We produce no product at all. And certainly at the moment, it's all being done at home. So, you know, we don't, our video games don't get manufactured. They're all digitally distributed and stuff like that. So it's pretty easy for us to bang the climate drum. And I really thought what was just discussed now about taking responsibility of it, I think that helps a lot with the anxiety. And so I think even if you can't make a huge change, just making those little changes yourself, I think it just feels good. And I think my challenge to businesses, and certainly most of the CEOs I've discussed it with, would say that it just pays well to be mindful of the climate now. Customers are expecting it. Investors are expecting it more and more. So, yeah, I think even if you're a small business out there, I think it just pays to be mindful of that. Your customers are expecting it now.
But Joe, didn't your research show that they weren't really expecting it?
Yeah, I think a substantial amount of businesses are saying that it isn't necessarily top of mind for their consumers. So, you know, there's work there obviously for us to do to empower consumers, to remind us all as individuals of our ability to shape, you know, where our disposable income goes and the brands that we choose to associate ourselves with and the providers in which we give our business to. There's a lot of power collectively that we have to demand businesses to give more transparency in their processes and to, you know, and to improve those emissions profiles and waste reduction systems, I guess, that they operate under.
But some of the decisions we make aren't super popular either. So I know internally we moved to a great new site in the Commercial Bay building. And as part of that move, we actually ditched previously at our studios, we'd provided a lot of car parks and stuff. We decided that we were going to really just sort of nudge people in the direction of making use of, you know, electric scooters or public transport. And there was a bit of pushback from staff. A lot of people did want those car parks, but I think sometimes maybe as business, we also have to try and make those nudges in the direction that you might get some grizzles from staff.
Even the Queen's been reportedly overheard suggesting she's irritated by people who talk and don't do ahead of next month's climate change summit. Does that actually sum up New Zealand's attitude or not, Joe? So you've just lost Joe there. That's the General Manager of Marketing and Communications from, I think she's back actually. Are you still
I'm
there,
back.
Joe? Did you
yeah,
hear what
I
said?
No, I missed it. I'd love it.
The Queen, even the Queen, was supposedly overheard saying that she's irritated by people who talk and don't do. Does that sum up New Zealanders' attitude?
I think, look, how I would describe climate change, it's really hard to make it one of those pressing issues, especially when we're, you know, navigating our way through a pandemic, and it feels a little bit off in the distance. But what I would say is that, yes, the time for action is now. You know, our actions speak louder than words, and that is really the message that we're wanting to put out into market now, is to compel New Zealanders, to put a challenge, a wedo to New Zealanders, that actually, you know, this can be really positive. We still have time. It can be small incremental shifts or it can be grand sweeping gestures, but actually we need to throw our energy into this and we need to get imaginative and creative and see it as a positive thing.
Thanks very much, Joe.
It's, really appreciate it.
Joe Bai from EECA. It's 27 minutes past four. And as you may have heard, the Prime Minister and her partner, Clark Gayford, are engaged to be married. And a few days ago, a story came out from Caroline Meng-Yi, investigative reporter in the New Zealand Herald. Caroline's been investigating the couple's wedding plans and the venue. And the venue was booked to be on the outskirts of Gisborne, but it all went pear-shaped, as Barbara Ward, who's Jacinda Ardern's electorate secretary, described it, after the venue owner felt that he'd been overlooked in favour of celebrity chef Peter Gordon to do the cooking. The owner thought it was going to be a collaborative effort and he'd be working with Gordon. However, when it came down to it, Peter Gordon just wanted the owner to provide lettuce leaves from his garden, organic, plums, homemade shortbread and some mini pizzas for late night snacks while he, Gordon, did the bulk of the catering. Well, the owner thought this was insulting and it all fell apart from there and a $5,000 cancellation fee was demanded and now that's being disputed. Zoe, Judge Judy would love this, wouldn't she? Who's in the right, do you think?
Absolutely. That's a really good question. I don't know. Having been married and had a wedding, I understand how stressful weddings can be. For me, I think that weddings and funerals bring out the best and worst in people. And I've experienced some really interesting weddings. I've witnessed punch-ups. I've witnessed arguments. With my wedding, I had a breakdown of a friendship because of it. Also now I'm divorced, which is totally fine.
A friend of yours. We won't go into the details, but a breakdown of a friendship with you.
Yeah. So the night before my wedding, she showed up with a guy that she had met online a couple of weeks beforehand and had only met him that day. And that was the night before the wedding. And I said, no, he cannot come to the wedding. I do not know who he is. I already had said no. We had this whole thing about no plus ones unless we knew them. She showed up to the wedding without him and then left halfway through the meal. And that was it. We haven't really spoken since. And I wish her well, but I don't think that she's with him. And that was a few years ago now. But yeah.
Well, she didn't bring him to the wedding. That was good.
Well, he did turn up to the aftermatch function, the dancing part. But right. I was like, I don't even know this person, you know. So, yeah, weddings.
2101. If you'd like to comment on that, and Dean, any wedding stories?
Not really. I haven't actually been to a lot of weddings, but I'm sort of minded of, you know, they who pay the piper call the tune. And I think probably the whole thing to me sounds like the Prime Minister dodged a bullet, you know. I'd love Peter Gordon to cook food for me as well. So, you know, that's the thing. I don't know. I'm sort of surprised by all the kerfuffle around it because I think, you know, you pay the piper, you call the tune of it.
It would be very nice to have Peter Gordon.
It's that person's big day, you know.
Yes.
It's their big day and, so, you know, if someone's paying me and they just want me to provide lettuce, then you know what? I'll provide the lettuce.
Organic.